Apologies and on the apologies, we've got the apology from Minister, Deputy Minister Ayanda Rosa. This is due to the cabinet activities that are taking place today. We've got another apology from Honorable Marae. So Honorable Marae won't be able to come. Then the next apology is the Minister, Honorable Ray Padej, due to government business. It's a cabinet day today, as we know about that clash. So those are the apologies. In other words, it means you can still proceed with the meeting in the light of these apologies. Honourable members, I'll quickly introduce the members of Parliament that are here with us today. And I can see before me there is Honourable Zimbi, who is here. There is Honourable Manana. There is Honourable Williams. There is Honourable Nyakembe. There is Honourable Mohali. There is Honourable Maluleke, and here is Honorable Busheko. So those are members of this committee who are present with us, with only the apology from Honorable Marae. It means that Honorable Detoit might arrive. He arrives inside. Okay. I would request that the department will introduce the whole entourage. I can see the DG. It's here with us, and possibly what I'll request, as per also the request from the members, can I request the DG to come join us here while the department is going through the presentation? I remember, DG, they wanted to see you eye to eye, you know, I don't have to send a card. So possibly we can leave a personal presenting from that side, so that would be comfortable, please. But in the meantime, the DG will have to come and join us. And we'll request also when the other presenters are presenting to also join us here. At the moment, can I request that you, while you're coming, I want to indicate that in terms of the briefing by the Community Law Center, we do have Nicole, it's Nicole Bedwoff, if I'm calling it correctly, there's Nicole there. Okay, can you just, yeah, and Megan Trey Johnson, and then there is Lorenzo Wakefield, okay, there is Justin Silvanza, okay, have I left out anyone? Okay, great. Okay, so those are, you'll also do another introduction on to come, just I wanted to know that you are here with us and you are present. And that is Honorable Detroit arriving, Honorable Member Detroit. So we will be proceeding then. What we are going to do is that, Honorable Members, as per our work, we know that we were really saturated last year. There was so much that we had to defer to the first session of Parliament. Amongst other things that we've deferred, actually the first Parliament deals with all matters that we could not really take on board and which we could have finalized last year. And therefore, as you could have seen, our program for this year, it's all the aspects that we haven't really dealt with. And therefore, the African peer review mechanism as well, you know, as we always require the department to report on us, had been on the agenda, but we could not implement it. And even more than that, there was a request from the Community Law Center to also do a presentation which we confirmed but also deferred to this date sometime because it was impossible for us to just absorb the workload that we had for last year. And therefore, it gives me pleasure that today we are able to deal with that aspect. And as a matter of principle, as much as we'll be getting an update, we will also hear opinions from the Community Law Center in terms of this program. We did also invite our representative from the African Union, but due to protocol processes, we cannot be with her here. It's the former speaker and the former deputy president of the country, Mayor Baleka Mbete. But we want to believe that in the future, maybe one will work protocol issues appropriately, because she was really willing and ready to be part of this meeting. And I would really want to appreciate the willingness that she indicated that. Can we then proceed, honorable members, and how we're going to start then? I would really want to emphasize the role that this committee plays. The unfortunate part of this committee, as I always say, it is not a line functional committee like the rest. All issues are to deal with, they cut across all committees. And therefore it becomes important at all times to realize how we then package our program to inform all other committees, to mainstream the work that we are doing quite appropriately, so that our oversight role impacts quite in a positive way, and it gets a good outcome. And therefore, part of this meeting again, is that symbol. The APR cannot be a line functionary issue for Parliament, but it's a matter that definitely cuts across, and we are going to start to understand how far we are, what are all views in terms of the APRM, and therefore ourselves as a committee do plan to mainstream all those aspects with that idea of the oversight public safety seminar that we have, which picks up on all other key critical aspects that requires mainstreaming. And therefore it does package that, and then it informs all other committees, and then it is able to then ensure that all the work of Parliament mainstreams all the aspects that need the attention of all committees, APRM being one of them, African peer review mechanism. At this point in time, I'm going to hand over to the DG of the department to proceed with the introduction.
Thank you very much, the team that is with me today, is Masilo, who is the Chief Financial Officer, who will be assisting when we deal with the second presentation on the third quarterly report, especially the finances. And Dr. Alex Mahaba is the Deputy Director General responsible for governance and international relations. He will be leading in the presentation. Next to him is Mr. Tokozan Tusi, who is the Chief Director responsible for the APRM department. And Mr. Alvin Pumuzorapia, Special Advisor to the Minister. And we're supported by other colleagues at the back, our colleague from the Office of the Public Service Commission, Rose Pius, our Parliamentary Liaison Office, Oliver Shamila, and our colleague right at the back there, Anushia. That's the team that we have with us, Chairperson. With your permission, I will hand over to Dr. Mahaba to take us through the presentation. Dr. Mahaba.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, DG, honorable members, and all invited guests. Our presentation is structured as follows. We will start with the background, but we have realized in case of the time that we should not put much more background as the members are well informed about the APRM. It's just a smaller background. And also the South African approach to the APRM as a country, how do we approach it? And also we'll give progress to date, and also issues raised during the tabling of South African Second Progress Report in January 2011, and also challenges identified during the tabling of the Second Progress Report, and also the recommendation by the APR Forum. APR Forum is the heads of states that attend during January, and also the A, the way forward. In case of the background, Chair, we want to elaborate that the African Peer Review Mechanism is a self-monitoring instrument voluntarily agreed and acceded to by member states of the African Union. And we know we are part of that APRM, and its primary purpose is to foster the adoption of policies, standards, and practices that lead to political stability, high economic growth, sustainable development, and accelerated sub-regional and continental economic integration through sharing of experience and reinforcement of successful and best practices, including identifying deficiencies and assessing the needs of a capacity building. So, in case of the approach by the country, we say the APRM process is in South Africa is a participatory process led by the government, which includes the civil society. On the civil society, we've got business, labor professionals, and other interested parties. A range of different mechanisms are used to ensure that citizens have a chance to contribute. The overall objective is to build a consensus and ensure a buy-in to a country program of action on its implementation. When you talk about inclusiveness, we said also the Community Development Workers and Ward Committee play an important role in community and local level consultations because during this process you need to consult the communities, and then how do you consult them? So CDW has scattered around in case of assisting us for the consultation of the what you call the community. Leaders of the other social sectors are invited to make submission and participate in the National Governing Council. We've got an NGC and also the Provincial Governing Councils. In case of the technical, we talk about accredited research partners participated in this what you call program. We are saying South Africa voluntarily acceded to APR mechanism in March 2003 in Abuja in Nigeria. This is a smaller background on South Africa when they acceded to APRM. South Africa was peer reviewed in July 2007 and a country review report was published. South Africa tabled its first report on the implementation of the program of action in January 2009 at the APR forum in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. This covers the period from November 2007 to December 2008. South Africa tabled its second report on the implementation of National Program of Action in January 2011, as we said in the beginning. This report covers the period from 2009 to November 2010. At the last summit that we just attended now, of which we call it the APR, the 16th APR forum held in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia 2012, South Africa presented a candidate to serve on the panel of eminent persons, of which the chairperson has elaborated that the chairperson was supposed to, be here as a member of eminent person, but due to protocol issues, she could not attend. So now we talk about Ms. Baleka Mbete, the former deputy president of the country. So Ms. Mbete was formally admitted and accepted as a member of the eminent panel. Presently, we've got 8 members on the eminent panel, and then they need to be 9 according to new operational procedure. So now it means also other countries, because it was centralized according to regions and all those things. So if other regions are not represented, so they are eligible to appoint one panel member. The 16th APR forum further adopted new rules of the operating procedure for the APRM, and this increased the panel members to 8. The South African focal point led the process of the finalization of the operating procedure. We were tasked as South Africa to be able to technically and also administratively and politically look at the operating procedures. So they were finalized, and then the Minister of Public Service and Administration presented those operating procedures, and they were adopted in the 16th APR forum in Addis Ababa in 2012. According to the decision of the AP of the African Union, 11 ordinary sessions held in 2008, South Africa was mandated to lead the integration of the continental APR into Nepal. The country is currently finalizing the process. Together, ourselves as the DPSA, we have partnered with DICO and also with the Secretariat to try to finalize this, what you call it, the integration process into NEPAD. South Africa will be presenting a third progress report on the implementation of the National Program of Action in July 2011, the following year. The second generation country review report is envisaged to take place in 2014 or 2015 after an assessment of the country's readiness is completed. We said issues raised during the tabling of the second report, which we want to give a progress on it. We said during the tabling of the South African second report, the country has commented on the progress made on the implementation of the program of action, what was identified on the report. Most of them, according to the checklist, were implemented according to our program of action. The inclusiveness of participatory approach in developing the report, going around involving the communities, involving the NGC, involving the civil society, and also our technical sound group in case of the research academics and all those things, were part of the developing the report, including the SIA, were part of this report. So, commended on the establishing the National Planning Commission as the best practice other than African countries can learn from. So now, after establishing this National Planning Commission, it was also part of the report in case of the best practices that we have shared with the, our African countries counterpart. So for that, we are commended to say this is the body that will be able to serve, and it will also assist in other countries so that they can copy the best practices. Progress made in the gender mainstreaming, managing diversity, fight against corruption, and the land reform. And then also adopting a collaborative approach between government, business, and civil society in combating corruption. We know we've got multi-agencies in fighting corruption. So now for that, we were commended to say at least we are serious in case of fighting corruption. It's not only about government. The business is involved. The civil society is involved. We have just recently here the launch from the COSATU in case of the anti-corruption agents, which will work in collaboration with us in case of fighting corruption. We are also commended for having developed the Kindri report on the corporate governance to show that we are serious in case of promoting governance in South Africa. The challenges that were identified during this time when the progress report was presented, it was a xenophobia issue. So in case of xenophobia, they say the issue was identified as a challenge that needs to be addressed during the presentation of the second report. So in case of the recommendations that were given by the APR forum, which are the heads of state represented within that AU forum, they recommended that South Africa look into the issue of the xenophobia seriously and recommended that South Africa investigate the possibility of merging the corruption fighting institution into one. As we said, we've got so many institutions, so many agencies in case of fighting corruption. So they want us to be able to streamline and try to synergize in case of the operation of such agencies. Recommend that South Africa provide a detailed elaboration on the KIM 3 intervention to benefit the continent. What is the way forward as a government that we said in case of addressing the issues that were raised? We said the MPSA as a focal point for the APRN is a national focal point of South Africa. So in collaboration with other relevant stakeholders in the APRN program, plans to convene a national dialogue on xenophobia in 2012 in order to engage on the issues and report progress during the presentation of the third progress report. That's the what you call the plan of action that we are having in case of dealing with the issue of xenophobia. In addition, efforts have been made by the National Focal Point to undertake activities aimed at dealing with other cross-cutting issues such as managing diversity, violence against women and children, crime and corruption, and unemployment identified in the National Program of Action to the presentation of the third progress report. That is all, Chairperson, in case of the progress until today. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Did you, is there anything you wanted to say? Okay, thank you very much. That was the presentation, honorable members, on the African peer review mechanism, progress thus far. And before we proceed, can I find out from members, are there issues that you think you need to be engaged in reconciliation, or do you want to ask questions or any comments thereon? Honorable Doyle.
Thank you, madam. I've just got a few questions. If the answers are not ready, we can get it later by way of written answer questions. I try to keep my questions to playing the ball, not the man, you will see. I see that it's from March 2003 until now is 9 years. I do know that things sometimes, especially when you have to deal with other countries, you can't decide your own speed. How much money went into this project over the last 9 years? That's the first question. Second is, what is South Africa's percentage of the total contribution by countries? What is it normally spent on? Is it projects on the ground, or is it conferences, that type of thing? If you don't have the detail, just in broad terms, we can get the detail another time. And then the last question is, what is the current and the next year's amount budgeted for our contribution to this effort? I mean, it's a commendable effort, but we need to get a perspective on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Do you have any response on the question? For what?
Thanks, Chair. As the Honorable Member said, in case of the details, we can be able to provide in writing, because we need to go down and make all the details in case of getting all the sense in case of the budget. But and at the same time, in case of the process, it's not much costly, because the department is only coordinating in case of that process, but we'll be able to give a detailed background in case of the cost. And also in case of the total country contributions for access into this APRM, we'll be able to give the total cost in case of how much subscription do we pay. And the budget, in the detailed budget for the following year, I think it's only departmental budget that we are having. So now for us to have a detail, it means we need to sit with DECO also, because also DECO plays an important part towards the facilitation of this APRM program on the AU side. So thus we'll have to sit with them and look at what is the budget. But for the department, we've got just a smaller budget for the coordination.
Okay, I will request them that maybe those responses be forwarded as already put forward. Any other discussion, point of focus, Honorable Nyakembe?
Thank you, sir. It's good to have Honorable Williams next to me. He was he's also a technical advisor to me. Because I was looking for where do I have to press in order for me to talk. So he has done. Thank you very much, sir. I think the mine is just a principle, sir. In terms of how do we approach presentations. I'm not standing for the department, but I'm just looking at the approach in terms of the presentations. This is a brief of the work that has been done by the department. Starting from 2003 in terms of the presentation. But I also think that every department, if there's money allocated to them, whatever work that they do with that amount that has been allocated, there are annual reports which such expenditures and money that has been used on what and when and why, they also do reflect in those reports. But for me, if then we say the department must go and look back as from 2003 up until now, I'm also looking at the plans of the approach by the department. In fact, as the Minister of Finance will give the budget speech today, which will be followed by budget board debate, where the department will say, out of the money that has been allocated for us, in terms of international work, this is so much that we're going to put aside. So I think, Chair, for me, we can visit as members annual reports that were produced by the department before, in order for the department to focus at the work at hand. Because if they will dig in each and every information of work that is done before, obviously at the end of the day we will sit in the neck of the department and say they are not doing the work that they are supposed to do, because we are always saying to them they must go and look for work that has been done long years ago. So I'm raising this point, Madam Chair, as an approach. How do we approach these reports? Because if our approach would be to say they must go and scratch the archives, really for me, we will be not doing justice to the department. Thank you.
Just another matter that comes to my attention. Remember that we've got on our third item of the agenda, we've got the quarterly report. The quarterly report from the department that outlines some processes. And then it does also impact on the issue of budget. And therefore, possibly in the international relations, we might also hint. I just liaised with the DG and he had confirmed that in the international relations, they do capture that zone. Part of how we monitor this, like you're saying, Honorable Nyagambai, like it is asked by Honorable Tudoy, is that we want to monitor how the expenditure is taking place as well. It's very critical. It's important for the committee. And therefore, possibly we'll also just look around the international relations. You know, the other ones with the COWEL, maybe it's another aspect, but directly for us to just look into how you break down your expenditure, possibly this matter, how it's worked on board. That can also serve as part of satisfying us on this matter, because once we do oversight, it's important for us to also look into that. Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got a question. It talked about the ward committees and the CDWs being involved heavily. I'd like to know whether or not that is what is called civil society within the presentation. I just want some more clarity on what civil society they engaged with in order to come up with these recommendations. So who did they talk to in civil society? Thank you.
Any response on that?
No, thanks. The CDW is not part of the civil society. What we have in case of the civil society, we've got SANCOC, which represent the entire civil society, which has been, and also we've got the business sectors, and also what you call the institution, as we said, it's our research partners in case of the technical assistance when coming to the report and the research work.
Sorry, just to repeat, you said who represents the entire civil society? I just want to get clarity on that.
We've got SANCOC, which is part of the NGC, and also breaking it down to the provinces, they become provincial governing councils. So within that, we've got business sector, we've got the business sector, and also what's the second one? Labor, sorry, I forgot the name, yes. Labor, business sector. And then they sit with the focal point, that's part of the NGC, and we break it down to the province. We've got the provincial governing councils. Also, all sectors of societies are represented.
Now, thank you very much, Chair, the department. Just to indicate that this is one of the major issues that we're going to attend to. We are going to go back to the Chair of Chairs and see how to package the briefing for all other clusters of Parliament. Of course, clusters haven't been formally constituted in Parliament, but there is a way of being various committees which will take effect from this year. And also there will be, because this is also programmed within our program of Parliament, and therefore we will refine this and we'll definitely work with the budget in terms of getting appropriate briefings and also just to find the mandate of Parliament, how do they intend to move forward during our role of oversight of this matter? DJ, thank you very much for on this one. We can proceed, members, if there's nothing else. We can proceed to the next item on the agenda, which is the briefing again by the Community Law Center on African Review Mechanism Monitoring Project. It's an independent assessment of governance in South Africa report entitled Implementing the APRN. These are the views from civil society. I made to understand it in the form of a speech, and therefore we'll get that. But I'll be guided by yourself in terms of how you conduct that. Like I did, I'm inviting the one who will do the presentation to come join us in front here. Community Law Center, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Sorry, Nicole, can I just allow you to just go through the introductions again, then you can proceed.
Okay, good morning, Honorable Members and everybody present. My name is Lorenzo Wakefield. I'm a researcher at the Community Law Center at the University of the Western Cape. Just to a point of a small point of clarity, the Community Law Center has a parliamentary program which seeks to bring people to parliament and looking at international and regional law and how it influences on South African policy and South African and how South Africa is applying it. So what we've realized is that the Views on Civil Society report was a process led by South Africa Institute for International Affairs at Wits University with multiple other partners. So we just thought we could use that measure. We participated in the research process as well, but we could just bring them, use that measure, and I thought it was a good way to bring it to Parliament as well. So in the team, Nicole Beardwood from the South Africa Institute for International Affairs would be doing most of the presentation, or should be doing the entire presentation. Myself and Mr. Jagan Gray-Johnson from PAPRIMAP are here to sort of assist in any form of questions or answers that might be asked from honorable members in the room. So over to Nicole. Thank you.
Before you start, Nicole, I just need to apologize to everyone in this room. Like, I know it's very hot. The air cons are not really functioning properly. Sincere apologies. We do struggle with venues in Parliament, you know, sitting various venues. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult to get to them. They are working on the aircon, it's a matter of time. Really, apologies. Let's bear with the seat so long as the work is going on, and we will get better venues in the future. Thank you.
Good morning. Chairperson of the committee, Ms. Honourable Mrs. Joyce Clementine Maloy-Maropa. Thank you for having us.
Sorry, somebody is raising a hand. Honourable Member, Honourable Malulek.
Thank you, Chair. This phone, Chairperson, is used when we sign the contract too small, and it used to be the one that they rob us with. I don't know what this phone is going to do with us. It's too small. what is happening for the presentation to be like this?
Okay, possibly let's depend largely on the presentation. And since the fund is small for members, and just to request in future to have a bigger fund. But at the moment, it's safe to say you do have a presentation will actually follow on that. Honourable members, we are proceeding with an e-call. Sort of the interruption started, it has a consent by a member in terms of the fund. Proceed.
Thank you. Honourable members, representatives of the Department of Public Service and Administration, Director General, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you again for affording us the opportunity to address you this morning. My name is Nicole Beardsworth. I'm a researcher on the Governance and African Peer Review Mechanism Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. This morning, I'm not going to be referring too much to the PowerPoint presentation. I felt that it was better to engage with you verbally, and then we can engage in a question and answer session thereafter. So, joining me from FIRE is Ms. Marilee Dupree, who is the Project Manager on the Governance of Africa's Resources Program. The project that we're here to discuss today was a joint collaboration between SIRE, the Centre for Policy Studies, and the African Governance Monitoring and Advocacy Project, which is a project of the Open Society Foundations. Joining us from AFRIMAT is Mr. Jagan Gray Johnson, the Advocacy and Communications Officer, who was directly involved in the project and has extensive knowledge of APRM processes and governance across the continent. Mr. Justin Sylvester is also joining us from the Human Rights and Governance Program at OSF South Africa, and Mr. Lorenzo Wakefield, sitting at the top, is the final member of our delegation who was involved in the writing and validation of the report. As the Honourable Chairperson had said to you, what you have in front of you is the report published by the African Peer Review Mechanism Monitoring Project entitled Implementing the APRM, Views from Civil Society. This was a collaborative civil society project undertaken by representatives of 13 organizations as well as a number of independent researchers. Madam Chairperson, please forgive me for any duplication that might occur with the previous presentation, but this presentation will aim to cover three things. It will briefly discuss the history of the Continental APRM and the progress of the initiative at a national level. I will then discuss the findings of the Civil Society Monitoring Project report. And finally, the presentation will look at the role that Parliament could play in strengthening the APRM process at a national level. As was discussed earlier, the African Peer Review Mechanism was launched in 2003 as a mutually agreed instrument voluntarily acceded to by the member states of the AU as an African self-monitoring mechanism. It's an African-owned process which aspires to improve governance and development by identifying key challenges and instituting solutions. It hopes to influence these processes through peer learning, dialogue, peer pressure, and diplomacy, as well as through civil society involvement at all stages of the process to help catalyze reform and prevent backsliding. The APRM measures adherence to continental and international governance standards in four thematic areas, which are democracy and political governance, economic governance and management, corporate governance, and socioeconomic development. 33 of Africa's 54 states have joined the mechanism, and 15 member countries have since been reviewed. The mechanism faces a number of challenges. The outcomes of this initiative are largely determined by, first and foremost, political commitment at both national and AU levels. Demonstrable political will and commitment at the highest level of national government constitutes a major challenge to the APRM implementation process. Monitoring and evaluation processes constitute a key element in the post-APRM review period. But the designing and instituting of a systematic monitoring and evaluation plan for the implementation of the national programs of action is often lacking. In spite of the mechanism's focus on the direct participation of citizens, the participatory approach is often cosmetic, and the APRM is seen as a government-owned and executive-driven process instead of a citizenry-centered consultative process. In spite of this, the countries that have acceded to the process and have taken the spirit of the exercise seriously have generally shown vast improvements in socioeconomic development and governance, Most importantly, these countries have used the APRM to open up the space for constructive dialogue between civil society and governments throughout the region on some of the most vexing governance challenges facing our continent, such as endemic corruption, abject poverty, deficiencies in public service delivery systems, justice sector reforms, and the rule of law and election management. Honorable MPs, South Africa was instrumental in the development of the APRM and was a pioneer in this initiative. To illustrate the important role that South Africa continues to play, as we have noted, the unanimous election of ANC chairperson, Ms. Baleka Mbete, by the participating heads of state to serve on the panel of eminent persons in January 2012. In addition, as evidence of his commitment to this initiative, President Jacob Zuma has consistently attended every meeting of the APRM Forum during his tenure. South Africa has led the way for the full implementation of the APRM process over the years since it acceded to the process almost a decade ago. It was one of the few countries to have undergone the whole process and has been reviewed by its peers twice. This is no easy task. In March 2003, when we elected to join a very small number of states in the bold move to lead the charge towards governance transformation, South Africa signed a memorandum of understanding with the APRM authorities to undergo the review and made a commitment to such a process. The review commenced with a self-assessment process in 2005, which culminated in a self-assessment report submitted to the APR Forum in 2006. Subsequently, the country was peer-reviewed and the CRR, or the Country Review Report, was issued in July 2007, which included the National Program of Action. The National Program of Action is a document outlining the commitments made by government to address issues highlighted in the Country Review Report. As part of compliance, the country is expected to report annually on the implementation of this program of action. Subsequently, as the DPSA has mentioned, South Africa has submitted two implementation reports, the first in January 2009 and the second in January 2011. It is important to note that both reports were submitted timeously, which shows a commendable level of political will and commitment to the APRM process. To its detriment, however, the first report did not adequately cover many of the developments that had taken place since accession to the peer review mechanism. This problem may have been overcome through increased consultation with stakeholders and civil society groups. The second implementation report was the result of a far more participatory and inclusive process, which consisted of consultative conferences at both provincial and national levels. It also included consultation with civil society groups, such as my organization, the South African Institute of International Affairs. Unfortunately, the issues raised in the report were not sufficiently linked back to the program of action, and the outcomes of the consultative processes were not adequately reflected in the final report. Both reports failed to provide an accurate account of the progress achieved since 2007, and much of the reporting lacked concrete data and statistics as evidence of what had been achieved in delivering on the commitments to improve governance around the four thematic areas. Madam Chairperson, Ministers of the DPSA, and Honourable MPs, I will now discuss the Civil Society Monitoring Report, which is the report that you have in front of you. In response to the issues highlighted above, the South African Institute of International Affairs, the Centre for Policy Studies, and the African Governance Monitoring and Advocacy Project launched the South African APRM Monitoring Project report in June 2011. It would be the first report of its kind to be launched in Southern Africa, and only the second in Africa, which monitored government's commitments and its keeping with promises to improve on job creation, reduce poverty, fight corruption and economic crimes, improve on service delivery, and manage diversity and elections well. The main goal of this initiative, therefore, is to encourage and support government's commitments to governance reform. One of the greatest challenges to the progress of the APRM has been the monitoring and reporting on the implementation of the programs of action during the post-review phase. The objectives of the monitoring project are to empower civil society to track the implementation of these commitments and to enable them to evaluate the status of the mechanism within the country. This initiative does not intend to duplicate the work of government and the national APR structures, but to complement the South African implementation reports and expand upon existing monitoring and evaluation processes in a participatory and evidence-based manner. The process was led by the project team, but with broad ownership from participating civil society organizations. The report used a simple rating system in the form of a green, orange, or red light. I have changed the screen up at the top to reflect page 14 of the report. So if you would like a closer view, you're welcome to have a look at page 14. A red light was assigned to an issue to indicate that little or no progress has been achieved on addressing the issue and that government does not seem to be on track to complete it in the near future. An orange light was allocated to an issue if the evidence indicated that some progress had been achieved or that work on the issue had begun and that government seemed to be on track to finalize it within a reasonable deadline. Lastly, a green light indicates that the issue has been addressed and completed or a substantial amount of progress has been made. This rating system is effective as it enables the rapid identification of crucial areas where engagements should be prioritized. Honourable Members of Parliament, as expected, the majority of the issues in the report received an orange rating to indicate that some progress had been made on addressing the issue and that government seems to be on track in confronting these challenges. This meant that overall, the report assigned an orange rating to government's performance in implementing the commitments in the National Programme of Action. As a means of identifying areas in urgent need of attention, the report allocated 7 red lights where little or no improvement has been seen to the areas of corruption, party-state separation, cadre deployment and the politicization of institutions, the regulation of private funding to political parties, xenophobia, poverty, and unemployment. The civil society participants in the process felt that in each of these areas, interventions had not been sufficient to adequately address the issue. A theme which was not represented in the program of action or adequately addressed by the APRM self-assessment questionnaire is that of access to information and protection of the media. It was felt that it was important to include these issues in the report as a free and vibrant media is an essential feature of any democracy. This section was not rated due to its exclusion from the program of action, although it felt that the report should address issues concerning the media in light of plans to establish a media appeal tribunal and to introduce the Protection of Information Bill. Finally, a green light was allotted to the management of elections and the electoral system, an area in which all participants felt that the government performance had been consistently strong. In this arena, South Africa performed extremely well in comparison to peers from around the continent. The overall findings of this civil society report was that, in spite of the existence of strong legislation, the implementation of policy is often hindered by human and resource capacity constraints. The report found that although government had sustained the APRM structures within the country and supported and submitted the report as required, the process does seem to have lost momentum, and the national profile of the initiative within government, civil society, and the media has dropped some quite substantially. There is also a lack of clarity on the way that the APRM informs governance, policy, budgeting, and planning processes, and often success stories are not adequately linked back to the APRM commitments. The APRM has been a costly and time-consuming exercise, but it has great potential to improve central planning processes and streamline government initiatives. Madam Chairperson, I would like to now get to the reason for our presence here today. A report by the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa has found that parliaments and parliamentarians are critical in ensuring the success of the APRM process through policy engagement and by working to influence government decisions at the executive level. Parliamentarians at a provincial and national level can help to facilitate public ownership of the APRM, and by participating in the process, are afforded the opportunity to improve governance and creates a culture of accountability, inclusivity, participation, and transparency in public political life. South Africa does have a strong history of parliamentary participation in the APR process. Prior to the fielding of the Country Review Mission in July 2006, joint ad hoc committees were established for each of the 4 APRM thematic areas. Each committee called for input from the public, conducted independent research, and held community consultations in municipalities across the country. Unfortunately, as civil society, we're not certain whether or not these committees are still being convened since the completion of the initial peer review process. Parliament also has an important role to play in the monitoring and evaluation of the commitments defined in the Aetherium Programme of Action. One suggestion made by the UNECA report in this regard is to establish a permanent statutory body to monitor progress on government commitments and submit regular or annual reports to Parliament on the state and status of the Aetherium process, particularly along the ambits of the Programme of Action. Furthermore, advances in information and communications technology provide substantial opportunities to enhance capacity for information collection and dissemination, which may be leveraged to improve monitoring processes and widen avenues for citizen participation. A further opportunity exists for Parliament to establish strong linkages with civil society organisations who are already working on APRM and governance issues. A clear demonstration of such partnerships is evidenced by today's presentation, whereby civil society organisations can assist parliamentarians by providing information based on evidence, and in turn parliamentarians can use such evidence to effect policy reforms through their mandate as lawmakers. This is a partnership that we are more than ready to fully engage in. In conclusion, Honourable Madam Chairperson, Honourable Members of Parliament, and Ladies and Gentlemen, South Africa has a buoyant civil society, strong institutions, and a constitution that is second to none in Africa and beyond. The APRM process provides opportunities to build on these strengths and to consolidate the gains made in the post-apartheid era through deepening democracy and strengthening collaboration on governance issues between elected representatives and those that elected them. South Africa has been a pioneer in the APRM process and has set an example for its peers in terms of a number of best practices identified by the country review process. However, as the civil society report noted, there is still much progress to be made in terms of improving monitoring and evaluation processes, ensuring the implementation of core commitments, and enhancing the profile of the mechanism at a national level. A second country review process had been planned for 2013, but has now been moved to 2014 or 2015, and Parliament has the opportunity to play as decisive a role in the outcome of this process as it had in the production of the 2007 country review report. We are ready to work with parliamentarians to achieve this. We are grateful for your giving us the space to discuss our report and forward the findings to you through this August body. Once again, we thank you for your timely invitation.
So, thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, that's the presentation that has been outlined to us. Honourable Maluleke, I'm sure they were able to read it. You know, the small print that maybe it's been presented, but because they read it, possibly most of us have followed and heard what they said. And I want to indicate that we're joined again by Honourable Msima, who is also here with us, before we proceed. Honourable members, any take on this matter? I can see Honourable William stand us up. Honourable Maluleke, we'll go in that order, starting with Honourable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got a few questions about the makeup of the organisations on the monitoring process, the makeup of the AMP. From the organisations listed here, is this the 13 organisations, although there's 14 on page 15 of the big document, are these the organisations that make up the monitoring process that you say represents civil society? Because from what I can see on this list, it's apparent that they don't actually represent civil society. They seem to be rather Eurocentric in character. And I'd like to know who chooses who appears to represent the civil society you keep talking about. You know, you've got organizations that I wouldn't say have the best interests of the entire of civil society. And, you know, so I just want to know some clarity on these organizations. Thank you.
There is one question. Maybe let me just take also Honourable Maluleke.
Thank you, Chair. On the themes here, page 14, they talk about trader deployment, which is red. And when we follow their reports, it only speaks about the ruling party. So I want to check their research is based on the ruling party or on the all organizations in South Africa, political parties. Because what I see in their report is only saying in terms of the cadre development of the ruling party. And we have those challenges even on the other parties, particularly in Cape Town. So what I want to know is that their presentation is based on the ruling party or is based on the organizations in South Africa.
Thank you, Honorable Maluleke. Honorable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think linked to the emphasis in terms of the report and the intervention and the manner in which you want to work with parliamentarians, I will take that as forming part of monitoring and evaluation. If that is the case, would I be correct to say this administration, which has introduced a department that deals with monitoring and evaluation on the executive, which of course is also what you want to do, how do you see yourself working with that department? Do you want to have the same mandate? I'm not clear of this involvement of you with parliamentarians. I think you, for me, you need to unpack that. What is it? What kind of partnership are we talking about? Is it partnership where parliamentarians will say to you, can you make research on a particular issue and then parliamentarians work on that issue? Can you clarify a little bit on that? And the other point for me is, I heard you mentioning the name of the National Chairperson of the ANC. I'm asking myself, why do you choose to say she is the National Chairperson of the ANC, not taking into account the fact that, one, she has been the Deputy President, the caretaker Deputy President, and a speaker for the National Assembly for quite some time. And she was a Deputy Speaker before she was a speaker. And one of her responsibilities as a speaker was also to look at international work. So then her election, in my view, will also be informed by that. Why do I associate this with the ANC? Because for me, it's like now you there are certain political parties that you might not like, and I think you don't have to do that if that's what I'm trying to do. Chair, I think the last point for me is this booklet is too thick, and we just received it this morning. And it appears that even the presentation is a summary of what might be in the booklet itself. I think we will need time to engage with this. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. I wonder if you want to respond before I take other hands for the Honorable Mohali's hand. Would you like me to proceed or you want to respond first? Okay, go to say so that you don't lose all the issues raised. Okay. Right. Yeah, just to clarify in terms of the booklet, it was also distributed last year because we did envisage a presentation from them which did not take place, but the book's already said. Okay, just on that one. Okay, proceed.
Thank you for your questions, Honourable Members. I would like to address the last question first, if I may. In regards to the question of the Honourable National Chairperson of the ANC, Ms. Baleka Mbete. Oh dear, what is that now? I would just like to say that that was completely unintentional. We do recognize all of the other positions that she has previously held and that she continues to hold. And we do hold her in high esteem, and we have high hopes for her performance as this member of the panel of eminent persons. In terms of the other three questions, I would like to defer them to my colleague, Mr. Jagan Gray Johnson, for answering.
Thank you, Nicole. Honourable members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to at least respond to some of the questions that you had. I'd like to, first of all, answer the question that the Honourable Member asked about the makeup as to who represents civil society. The way the methodology and the convening of this research was conducted, and it was conducted at least over a period of about 9 months, we have gone through consultation, actually, with various different civil society organizations. The ones that you saw listed there were the ones that were directly involved in putting together the methodology and consistently being engaged in the validation. Having said that, the ministry itself, or the line ministry that is actually overseeing the APRM process for South Africa, was consulted along the way. They saw all three drafts, and we had consulted with the then minister about this particular report, and we sought input from actually every single corner of civil society and also non-state and state actors in getting input into this particular report. So if it seems if the situation is skewed and Eurocentric in character, it was said that was not the intention. Opportunity was actually made for state and non-state actors to actually ensure that we engage in this process. Secondly, the other issue on the cadre deployment. I think if we, the Honourable Member's question, I think we need to look at this report as being as objective as it presents itself, in the sense that the reason as to why we had actually talked about this was simply not referring to one particular section of a particular party, what we're looking at overall. That's the first thing. Secondly, no one is, or no single element is being singled out. This was done purely within the context of the governance issues and within the parameters in which the APRM actually is looking at addressing challenges where there are challenges and consolidating consolidating in the growth and deepening of democracy where evidence actually presents itself. And also, having said that, again, the report itself was actually looked at from the perspective of engaging positively with not only one particular party or ruling party, but actually policy and lawmakers from across the political divide, people that can make a difference to ensure that democracy is deepened and gains that have been made since this process started by South Africa can be consolidated. And we have actually acknowledged that there have been strong gains that have been made. Thirdly, the issue on the technical, the engagement or the partnership that was put forward in Nicole's presentation. The Honourable Member, I think as far as civil society is concerned, and also the technical research institutions especially, civil society, obviously we're able to provide research-generated data on public issues to Parliament. We've been doing this not only for this particular Parliament, but there are other parliamentary organizations that, for example, my organization, AFRIMAP and OSF, have been involved with. At the apex of the continental level, we've been engaged with the Pan-African Parliament. And what we've been able to do is to actually put together the evidence-based aspects of either governance or rule of law or issues about political participation and democracy. And these are three thematic cross-cutting themes that we think will be able to help parliamentarians better use that for the evidence-based advocacy approach, so that they'll be able to have better policy options when it comes to analyzing and when it comes to actually making informed decisions as to how citizens are best governed. And for us, in order to play that particular role as constructive agents or agents that can actually influence change by using the legitimate means and the mandate of parliamentarians that have got a direct representation from the citizenry, I think we'll be able to at least add that kind of a value by giving you the evidence that is needed so that you'll be able to at least effect change and look at your oversight role to strengthen that so that we can basically move the process forward. So for us to make that proposal, that is what we meant. Not necessarily to duplicate any rules or any roles or to overstep our mark, but basically to complement the already good work that you are doing within this office body. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just also like to add to the third question mentioned by Honorable Mkembe. On the role, the organization that I work for has a lot of experience in working with parliamentary committees as such, which includes the Committee on Correctional Services, the Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, in which we've created this working relationship and space with the committee, even apart from providing research and information to honorable members or to committees, is also to allow for some form of submissions being made by civil society when the department comes to present certain reports. An example of that is I run the Secretariat for the Child Justice Alliance, and we've created the space within the Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development to present a similar structure as we did today, which allows for that good opening the floor for good parliamentary debate from various angles, which would enrich our knowledge in all of our spheres, whether civil society, the executive, or the legislature as such.
Yeah, I had other hands, Honorable Muhali, Honorable Malilek. I'll take those two hands.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague here, Honorable Williams, asked the department whether civil society was represented in their presentation, and the answer was yes, they were represented by Sangoku. And now we do have this other organization which also is saying they're representing a civil society. Now I would like to find a common ground. Where do they meet? There's Sangoku. The department is saying that Sangoku is representing civil society. A common ground, where do they meet? Because I would also look at this organization and I would say, okay, people with disabilities are not represented here. They are not. And they are saying they're representing civil society. And how come? That is going to be a difficult one. And on the issue of which also the department spoke about, the issue of xenophobia. How do they differentiate between xenophobia and criminal acts? What is it? How do you say to a person, an ordinary person, who sees someone who's not a South African and say, this is xenophobic, this is not xenophobic? Because according to them, it's red. So it means they are better to explain it, to say this is xenophobia and this is not. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Muhali. Honorable Maluleke. All right. No, you were coming after. Can I skip you? All right. Honorable Banana. Oh, thanks. Can we get the responses on the matter that's raised?
Thank you very much.
My apologies. Bushiko's hand had been up because it's this side. I didn't really notice. Do you still want to proceed, Honorable Member? Okay. All right. So.
Thank you very much for those questions. The responding to the question on who represents civil society based on the two presentations that were made, whilst I do appreciate the concern for accurate representation and the generalizability of ensuring that whoever's termed a civil society is actually inclusive and not exclusive. For us, when we're looking at civil society, we understand it to be not only diverse, we also understand it to be extremely broad and extremely vast. In some instances, we are not able to get every single quarter of what is termed as civil society, or in this case, non-state actors, which is even broader than that, on board at every single occasion. And so my response to that would be that if this particular report refers to civil society, is it referring to every single sector of civil society? Absolutely not. But is it actually representing the true thinking and some representation of a broad segment of civil society? Do we have a constituency that is relative enough, that has got the authority to speak on behalf of civil society as we know it? I think that the answer would be yes. Just like the other presenters have said that they've got an NGO or an umbrella body that is actually representing civil society. So I would say that if both reports are saying they're representing civil society, one voice of civil society may not be the voice of all of civil society, but it is a voice of civil society. So that's the answer that I would give to that. Because it would be practically impossible, actually, to be able to get every single constituent that actually claims to represent civil society to come together and be part of a particular report. So that would be very difficult. Secondly, the issue of the definition of xenophobia. If the Honourable Member has a chance, and I'm sure maybe they haven't, in the report that South Africa had tabled to the eminent persons and also to the actual APR forum, one of the issues that actually came out of that and a recommendation was that this particular challenge had to be addressed. And as a result, for us, if you're looking at all the issues that we have put down in this particular report, it's emanating out of two documents, which is the empirical evidence that we are using a scientific approach to actually measure how far a particular country has come. And the issue of xenophobia did come up in this particular report. It's not something that we made up. That's the first thing. Secondly, also, how did we arrive at a point where we actually said that this was a red flag? Well, generally, I think it's public knowledge that there's been challenges when it comes to issues of xenophobia and dealing with it, to a point where the actual line ministry that is actually responsible for this APRM process today actually showed us the evidence by saying that they are actually committed to addressing this particular issue. So it is not coming from us. It is coming, one, from the APR report and the recommendation. It is coming from the line ministry itself. And then thirdly, basically what we have done is to use that evidence and basically be able to gauge that. So the issue of xenophobia is not something that we had concocted, but we have used the empirical evidence to actually measure scientifically as to how far the country has come in addressing this particular problem. Thank you.
Any other response, Honorable Manana?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, on this report, page 15, South Africa reports June 2011. I just want to understand, or rather, just get some clarity on the criteria that was used to select the participants in the South African ANP process. I see here this AfriForum, FWTP Foundation.
criteria.
Honorable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to refer to page 5 of the presentation, the one with the very small writing, that was it, the last paragraph. I'd like to know why, if it wasn't, you say it wasn't adequately covered in the address by the APRM self-assessment questionnaire, I'd like to know why the issues of the establishment of the Media Appeals Tribunal and the introduction of the Protection of State Information Bill were raised here, because these are clearly, the way in which it's been raised is clearly a political position of the opposition to the government, which is fair enough. But I want to know whether the organization that the speakers represent are promoting policies in opposition to the majority party. Thank you.
If you can just link the submission by Honorable Williams to this one, because I think the link of the selection process of this particular participant in the essay, what sort of an MP process is this?
Thank you for your question. I would just like to say the way that the selection was made was that we held 4 events, just going up to the screen. There. We built from our launch event in October 2010, at which there were about 80 participants of civil society organizations from across the country who were not quite selected, but self-selected. We sent out an invitation to let them know that we were working on these 4 themes, you know, democracy and political governance, economic governance and management, corporate governance, and socioeconomic development. And we invited civil society participation from across the spectrum. The way in which that launch event then worked was we asked for participation from those organizations, from those 80 representatives of organizations, and we said, where would you like to be involved in this initiative? You can participate by attending events. You can participate by submitting written documents, which will be included in the report, or you can just, you know, choose not to participate. What we had from that was the training workshop in January 2011, at which we trained those organizations who had self-selected to participate in the process, and from there, these organizations identified themselves as willing and able to participate in the writing of the report. It was a self-selective process, but we do understand your concerns in terms of the representativity of it, which I think we've already addressed. But in terms of the process itself, it was self-selective, and we had hoped to get as broad participation as possible. And we did get quite a broad range of participation. There was also a lot of discussion and disagreement on many of the issues, with AfriForum not possibly taking a stronger stance than is reflected in the final report, as well as some of the other more specific organizations who took quite a strong stance on many of the issues. But this was not necessarily reflected in the ultimate report, as you can see in the disclaimer below the list of organizations, where it's important to note that each of these organizations has different views, and not all of them agreed on everything in the report. We did try to get as balanced a view as possible within our report, and not to represent specific sectarian interests in a very overt way. Thank you.
May I proceed? Thank you. And basically, just to buttress that point that Nicole had made, the participants of this particular study, yes, they represented their own different views and they've got their own different mandates, and we understand that. But the core organizations that actually coordinated this particular study was AFRIMAP, which is the Africa Governance Monitoring and Advocacy Project, and we have a strong reputation in the sense that what we do is we actually focus on governance, not only in South Africa, but throughout the whole continent by using systematic audits based on continental norms and standards by which AU member states have actually committed to either uphold or to align with their own national constitutions. That's the first thing. Secondly, the South African Institute for International Affairs was also an anchor, which has got a reputation, a strong reputation for the work that it does. And then thirdly, we had CPS. What these three organizations did was to ensure that there was integrity that was injected into this report in the sense that whilst we recognize the fact that other organizations may have different mandates and different interests and biases, which is a reality, we ensured that at the end of the day, not a single one of them was able to dominate or dictate or actually bring in their own political points of views or their own biases into this particular study. Because at the end of the day, the objective of the exercise was simply to assist the process, one, and then secondly, to be creative enough to ensure that the APRM, of which we strongly believe will enable governments to deepen democracy and help them in their governance challenges to make sure that they improve and delivering for their own people, does not stop at the NPOA itself. It actually carries on. So there's a cycle of responsibility to hold not only the policymakers to account, but also realize the fact that civil society had a responsibility to actually contribute to the process. So that was the object of the exercise of this particular report. Secondly, coming to the issue about why did we mention the Media Appeals Tribunal and the Protection of State Information Bill when we had clearly said and stated that the APRM process does not particularly look at the media per se, but the functions and the role that the media plays, which is cross-cutting, touches upon all four thematic areas of the governance aspects of the APRM. So it would have been not only naive, but partly irresponsible not to have looked at that. Now, why particularly are we looking at the Protection of State Information Bill? The reason as to why we had looked at this was because, obviously, it was the most talked about issue at that particular point in time. That's the first thing. So it was impossible to actually ignore the elephant in the room. That's the first thing. Secondly, the other issue was, if we are looking at the issue of media reforms and regulation, of which South Africa actually is head and shoulders above its peers, way above its peers. When the levels of media freedom is not comparable to other African states, and that is a given. And because of that, by virtue of the fact that this country has come so far forward in ensuring that media reforms, media regulation are actually in line with continental standards, continental practices, and even at the international level. The debate within the participants of this particular report, and we have to remember that some of them also represented media, so they had technical knowledge and know-how as to basically what the ins and outs were of this particular bill. It was felt that if this were to go ahead, and many voices have echoed this in the past, it could be a threat towards the progress that this country has registered as far as having the gold standard when it comes to media regulation in any African country. And as a result, we felt that this was going to impact on three key areas: issues of accountability, issues of transparency, and issues of probity. And if you look at those three fundamental issues, it actually touches on good governance in every thematic area. That was the reason as to why we put it down.
Okay, maybe let me just outline the process as follows. We appreciate the presentation by the Community Law Center that has been brought before us. We appreciate some of the views I'll come to you in a moment that are put forward. Of course, we'll engage with those that you we want to find out more or are not comfortable or so on. But it's important for Parliament to open up for views from all other institutions, civil society, whoever is there. Because, you know, to only listen to ourselves sometimes without hearing also other voices, it might not be so balanced. So we still think it's good to hear other opinions in terms of the issues that are raised. We appreciate as well that there are gains that have been outlined from your report, but these are the gains that we have achieved, which actually means that you did not see only the negative, the positive we have also seen, hence the gains, and we accept that we have realized that you have also highlighted the gains. Of course, the members did raise the issue. You know, sometimes, you know, when we withdraw a report, especially if we distribute it as a report for discussion, the members did raise that, you know, why, you know, the selection of how you vote things, you know, the national chairperson of the ANC. I mean, really, it can antagonize even people who want to, who have good intentions, or, you know, it's an ANC thing, you know, especially if you bring something to the public forum. You know, like we're doing, you know, why don't you see the deputy president, the former, you know, the former deputy president, the former speaker of parliament, you know, which therefore means that we need to emphasize it's important to have responsible reporting. You know, but sometimes you can blow out your good intentions just by how you select the manner in which you report, you know, because she wasn't chosen because she was the national chairperson of the African National Congress. She was chosen because she played critical roles in the country, and therefore she is in the AU. It's an achievement for the country, you know. Not only the African, yes, of course, we can say it can achieve. The African National Congress can achieve that. It's 100 years, of course, it can. But in this instance, let's look at the country, you know, so that responsible reporting engulfs everyone, doesn't sort of antagonize others who don't belong necessarily to the African National Congress. Because we have brought this report now before us in Parliament. The members did raise the issue around the cadre deployment. We know it's a buzzword. Everywhere we go, they tell you about cadership deployment, the best thing that it does. And we really understand that, yeah, in some instances, there are people who are put in position, we know that, who don't do well. But once we discuss this thing, many times than often, it's important for us to also acknowledge who we are, you know, because once we don't acknowledge who we are, sometimes we might miss out and we might find ourselves antagonizing again other sectors of society while we're saying we're representing the same society. For example, if we don't acknowledge that there had been inequalities in the past where blacks were subjected to bantu education and could not access the high-level kind of education and keep anchoring tailored deployment, and so we might miss out in terms of how do we redress the situation that had been there. And therefore, it's important for us to know who, especially if you're coming here and say those are the views of the civil society, would want to see you anchoring that aspect as well. That from the side of civil society, of course, there are issues of this nature. Or at least say, if we do not agree with tailored deployment, what is the kind of redressing the inequalities that you think of, which can assist the whole country, blacks and whites, to actually deal with the past. You know what? The past is very clear that majority of black people are not educated. They never had resources to go to school. You know, I could have as well have been seated here uneducated. It's quite possible from the background that you come from, you know, and it would be like a cater who's just given a job. And therefore, it's important for us to just be sensitive to some of our background, because we are all a responsible society that tries to drive the country. Really, that's what we're trying to do. And therefore, once we use other terms, let's not antagonize, you know, in the report, especially if it comes to the public floor like this. And I don't really say people shouldn't attack the cadership deployment if there are some wrongdoings, but I would really want us to come up with something that says positively, so as a country, this is how we're moving forward, hence this is a positive reporting. One aspect that the members have raised is the issue of xenophobia. What the members are actually trying to say in this instance is that it's contested in terms of how it comes. Of course, it's already put read from your side. We do need a thorough research in the country, you know, where we say, yes, this is xenophobia,
You know, I remember one person was giving an example of, you know, of, no, no, maybe let me not go into the issues of examples, but it's a sensitive matter. We acknowledge that we do have to work more in terms of xenophobia. It's unfortunate for us in this country, you know, there was a media flash out of a person who banned, you know, our countries, many other countries are still freezing about that act, you know, how powerful media can be. And they just think that we're more worse than anyone else. It was seen all over, and therefore that image is there. While that image is there, it does not necessarily mean that there is no xenophobia at all. And, you know, we need to embark on a thorough research that will diagnose properly, deal with xenophobia head on, with knowledge, not with perception, but with knowledge, you know. We were discussing this aspect that once we deal particularly with the African continent, we have realized that some of the leadership within the African continent do not really do their work well, and we find that the economies of various countries in the African continent fall. And once the economy has crumpled, most other Africans see South Africa semi-developed, and they all want to come to our country. Of course, it does create a little bit of pressure on the shoulders of South Africa, because we also had to deal with issues of inequalities, issues of poverty. But at the same time, if it's a challenge that comes over, how best do we handle that? You know, because people want, you know, they move around, they want where they see things are better, and they will come to South Africa. And therefore, it's one reality that we need to possibly plan better as the country. How best do we deal with it? You know, unlike once it happens ad hoc, and we find that at the end of the day, people start to scrabble for resources and start to antagonize one another. We need to realize the challenge that is upon our shoulder and deal with it head on in that way, because surely now South Africa is starting to carry that heavy weight, and it's there, it's a reality, it's in our country. You know, people see there's water, there's electricity. It's much, much better than other countries. To find that you go to the town, they say this is a major city. There's a donkey aside, there's a boat here, there's a road, there's a major road, there's a saloon, there's a stop. But some of them had been liberated some time back. And therefore, we do need to realize that bigger challenge of activating other leaders to do the task, uplift the economy, so that we all live a better life. We've got the responsibility to actually impact on the African continent. Hence, you know, the APRs, the Millennium Development Goals, etc., etc. And therefore, we have to look through those issues, how best to deal with it. And therefore, it's important to just embark on a thorough research that will assist us to embark on the program of xenophobia in a proper and a better way, in an informed way, you know, so that we don't sound like we are also, you know, losing our road in terms of we can be able to deal with, we should deal with the aspect of xenophobia. Okay, I just thought maybe let's clear that, and let me find out from members if there are other issues. But we do appreciate that, definitely, to hear other views. You know, we will be dealing with the APRM. You know, if we dealt with it in that way, you know, and we are going to mainstream, it will be much better. But just to emphasize that we are, maybe at the end, Honorable Manana, maybe we'll cover what I wanted to say now.
Chair, I doubt if I will, because I appreciate that, of course, you are the chair, and your remarks have got to be, you know, inclusive and all of that. Well, I must say, Chen, I am not happy with the responses I got at all. You see, Chen, this is not a question, but it's just a request. Looking at the second report that was tabled on the implementation of the National Program of Action, and reading here that issues that were raised on that report related to the progress that we have made, especially in the fight against corruption. And then you get civil society that tells us we have done little or no improvement on corruption. It's clear to me, or rather, what we were expecting if we had organizations like AfriForum, FWTEC, Foundation, you ask up, because what different views can these organizations really put forward? For me, they speak one thing, but I just want to request that as they identify and select this, when I hear it's self-selecting, probably they should have brought us all the 80 members that eventually withdrew, and all these people, I do not want to use terms of counter-revolutionary here in this meeting, but clearly the same people who speak the same thing and who approach things the same way were then eventually selected or self-selected themselves. But just to say, this self-selected civil society must play the role of civil society and must never take the posture of being in opposition to the ruling party. It must not be the case, because from where I'm sitting, this is just a clear opposition party politics that is at play here. So I'm just requesting that as they do the self-selection, or probably you should use a different criteria to select, so that people don't get to self-select themselves, and eventually we are left with these people who want to really project themselves as opposition. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Honourable Manana. What I also needed to say at the end, Honourable Dutoit.
Yes, I'm very confused now after the last comments about civil society not being in opposition to government. I was just wondering, what society did we see the past year in Libya, Tunisia, and now in Syria and in Egypt? Isn't that, you know, also civil society? And they are being riotous, and there's a civil war, it seems, going on in Syria, and rather we would have this kind of interaction from civil society in a report than what we see over there.
Chair? A follow-up, Chair.
Okay, you first. Honourable Manan.
No, Chair, we should not take that approach, because it could be seen as a threat. We are saying civil society must be inclusive of everybody. Those who speak from a particular angle and those who speak from a different angle. But I am saying, I'm making a submission that from where I'm sitting, having interacted personally with this particular organization, they speak the same thing. That is what I'm saying. Now, civil society must be all inclusive. It must involve everybody, but we must not be told of Libya here and Tunisia. We find this one, Afroforum and all these ones that speak the same thing must come, but so must we hear other organizations. That is why I'm saying, probably as a request, a selection process must be crafted and all of that, instead of this self-selecting process that is presented to you.
I think just inclusivity, that's what the member is appealing for. Honorable Nyakembe.
Yes, thank you very much. I think the other point that I wanted to raise is what Honorable Malama Manana is emphasizing, that is it possible for you now to look at the criteria? Yes, we understood that it's self-selective. Now, can you look at another criteria? Can you find a creative way of being? Because sometimes it might happen, it's because of resources of other organizations not attending this. And that's one point. The other point is, for me, you must also look at what programs do exist in addressing all the points that you raised here, which inform the mandate of your organization. Are there programs that at the level of government is beginning to address this matter? For instance, the Minister Blade, was it yesterday? Yes. When we, in the statements in the House, his response was that it appears what is being taken into consideration is what the media says. and report by government departments and what government does is not being looked at all. If it's not making headlines in the media itself. So I'm saying you must find a balance. I think you are striving to do that. We're encouraging you to do that, to strike this balance. Thank you, sir.
Okay. No, it's just a member thing that we should, when we look at this, see it as a balanced review. But nonetheless, can I also proceed by saying that there are aspects that are coming forward which does require attention, which Parliament has been talking about, which the members, particularly in this committee, will also be involved and engaged in terms of dealing with that. For example, once we talk about the public participation, it's a model that Parliament is also refining and structuring it properly, make it much sharper, which therefore would mean that once there are opinions on that, they are well received, one would talk about, we do interact with various bodies, and more than often as this committee, we talk about the collaboration of institutions, that we can really impact much better and proper, and even more, once we bring various aspects, we collaborate, we find that even our work is much easier. I can just make an example of the Public Service Commission, which is an independent body that normally works with this committee and brings some researched work, which we're able to take and be able to engage with it with an informed view. And therefore, it is not wrong. In fact, it's part of what we preach about as public service and administration on the collaboration of institutions where we work with the independent bodies, where we work with all other bodies that can make our oversight work impact much better and have a better outcome. We do as well, of course, while we were emphasizing the issue of collaboration and also public participation that Parliament wants to take, we would remember that we are also public representatives. We should be representing the people who have mandated us to work here, because the civil society is a body. It's people that we actually represent, and it's a body that is like our principals. And therefore, their voice matters for us all, all parties, all the parties in Parliament. We are representing the public service with all constituency offices as well, where we should be within the people themselves, listening to the plight. And therefore, while we reshape and refine this instrument, we will consider how best we do that, because it's important to get the voice of the people. And therefore, I must indicate it's a discussion that is currently on the table, getting reshaped. And we will actually engage with everyone else in terms of that model. We have tried various models. There are suggestions 1, 2, 3, and 4 in terms of maybe this model, maybe that one, which therefore means that discussion of that nature won't last, but we'll always look and relook how do we shape ourselves. I'm raising this again, in the light of some time we find the department coming, for instance, with the MDG, with the report which already has a voice of the people, and therefore we have to do oversight and represent the people. It's a discussion that we also have to look at, the APRM as well, and therefore, so it's not a discussion, it's not a wrong discussion, it's quite correct, it comes at a time when we're dealing with it. We are definitely going to say, where do we locate the civil society? How do we interact with the civil society? How best, as a country, can we do that interaction, that representativity? For example, members do talk that there's Sangonko, and then there's also yourself. How do we collate that? How does it become balanced? Who has a bigger voice than who? How can we work together, also as a civil society? And therefore, those are positive discussions that will always take place, and therefore, it is our concern, it's something that we're taking quite seriously because we are dealing with it, and we will encourage, that interaction to be quite vibrant in order for us to deliver wherever we are, whether it's oversight or it's at the implementation level. But we must say we appreciate your presence in Parliament. The delay was not because we didn't want you to be here, it's because sometimes it's just pressing, but we are glad that at last we're able to be here in Parliament. And thank you very much for your presentation. Thanks. Okay, can I give you a 5-minute stretch and then we'll take the quarter report of the department? at 11:30, we'll commence with the quarterly report of the department, and then we can then proceed. The DG will come back again here in front. And thank you very much.
Thank you.